It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer.
This is Larry Connors reminding you to listen to my program Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., the Larry Connors USA Daily Report. But now, back to the outstanding Dr. Randy Tilghman.
Well, thank you, Larry, and it's always outstanding when we can give a little hope amidst all of the negativity going on in our management of this great country. Open borders, inflation, foreign threats not being addressed. And in this season of hope and Advent with the coming of the Christ child, I read with glee a piece in the Wall Street Journal recently by Thomas Duesterberg. He's a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, an expert of trade, manufacturing, economics, and foreign policy, because it gave me hope, Thomas, and welcome to the program, that maybe, just maybe, we might be able to retard, if not reverse, China's hegemonic ambition to dominate the world. Welcome to the program.
Randy, it's nice of you to have me, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, so this piece you wrote in the journal was really, I mean, talk about a roadmap for Sleepy Joe to just, you know, take under great advisement. I'm not confident he's going to do it, but it was called Placating Xi Won't Change China's Behavior. And, you know, I've been looking at what's been going on in China. I mean, their economy is not what they'd like us to think it is. And it's a great opportunity for America to use that leverage and really push back against some of the advances that China's making throughout the world. Why don't we set the stage for what China's been doing across the world, what their reality is now economically, and your several part prescription to try to use that to leverage America's advantage. Let's start with what China's adventures throughout the world.
Well, China's been growing its economy for 40 years, and their model is to overproduce manufactured goods, such as steel, but now increasingly things like solar panels and electric vehicles, and to dump those products on foreign markets. So it undermines the industrial sectors in the United States and in Europe. They're also very active in working to capture the supply chains around the world for industries of the future, like electric vehicles. Again, they control all the minerals, mining and processing of minerals that go into batteries. They have built this so-called Belt and Road Initiative to facilitate getting raw materials out of South Asia and Africa and sending manufactured goods into Europe and Latin America. So that's been undermining the economies, the traditional economies of U.S., Europe, and some of our partners on the Pacific Rim. My argument, though, is that their growth model is starting to fall apart, and it's because, number one, they've been over-reliant on exports, and they've been over-reliant on basically a real estate bubble that is falling apart, and they've over-leveraged their economy by borrowing too much money to build all these factories for. They have 400 or 500 factories building electric vehicles, for instance, and 100 factories building semiconductors. So it's just too much, and it's starting to fall apart. And so my argument is that they still need the markets in the United States, and they need the capital of the United States, and need the technology of the United States to keep their growth machine going. And my argument is we ought to cut them off from that, all of those things.
Okay. Well, let's take some of the individual pieces. You describe how they have very cleverly been charitable with countries throughout the world in the way they do trade with them, including in many cases trading in local currencies. And we've heard an awful lot about, at least their it's attributed to them by reporting that their goal is to undo the dollar as the currency of the world, you know, the reserve currency of the world. How successful is that, and can it be, and what can we do to combat that?
Well, they're not going to be successful in displacing the dollar. The most important reason is that their currency, the yuan, is not convertible. So what do you do with that currency if you can't convert it into dollars or pounds or yen or euro? And they have had success in trading with the pariah nations that we have sanctioned, like Iran and Russia, Venezuela for that matter. And they do trade with them in the local currencies. But the only thing that those countries can do with the Chinese currency is buy Chinese products. Most of the rest of the world is not going to stand for that. So all in all, I don't think their attempts to undermine the dollar and, you know, the other major developed country currencies is going to work.
All right. We're talking with Thomas Duesterberg with Hudson Institute and about the situation and the tension and the what I think is fairly described, Thomas, as the appeasement and the kumbaya posture that this president and this administration, and I think he's representative of many on the left, and I guess we should say big tech and other companies on the right, I mean, that, well, I don't know whether they're left or right, but they're capitalists. They're perfectly happy to get in bed with China and do whatever it takes because they want to get into that market. So there's this interesting, you know, on the left, can't we just get along from Joe? If we're just nice to them, you talk about carrots don't work with China. But there's, you know, not the manufacturing sector, certainly, but the technological sector wants to get into China. Hollywood wants to get into China. The NBA is perfectly happy with China. How do we as a country fight back against people within that don't want to see us overcome and become, again, the dominant and remain the dominant nation?
Well, in as much as the business community wants to get into China, I think it's a fool's errand in many ways. I mean, some of the companies, like the car companies, in the past have been successful in China. But now that China has moved up the chain of sophistication in terms of their manufacturing, they don't need our manufacturers anymore. So they're slowly squeezing them out. And for better or for worse, Tesla is probably going to start to lose market share in China. So the technology companies, Apple makes computers and phones in China, but China is starting to make their own, and they're starting to restrict the ability of Apple to sell in China. The car makers are slowly getting losing market share in China, and Chinese cars, other high technology products are starting to come into our markets. So they're starting to gain market share, and the business community is just not going to be successful going forward with the model that the Chinese have, which is to become self-sufficient, to drive foreign producers out of the country, foreign merchandisers out of their country. So we just have to call attention to the way they operate. And the second thing is the Chinese are do not share our values in any way. And there's all kinds of reporting about their use of basically forced labor in their province called Xinjiang, their repression of Tibet, their repression of people in Hong Kong. The Chinese are totally involved in the illicit drug trade, including fentanyl, but now even in the United States, they're involved in the marijuana trade and in the opium, other kinds of heroin trade and the like. And they launder the money that they make from that. So we just have to call attention to that and raise people's understanding that these are not nice folks, and they're not going to contribute to the sort of free trade system and free market system and democratic system that we have been the leader in building over the last 100 years in the world.
You know, you you pointed out something in your Wall Street Journal piece that I found really interesting. I wasn't aware of this, but in reaching out and trying to buy favor among less developed countries throughout the world, South America, Africa, other places, Middle East, China has made, you describe, dollar-based loans to those countries, and now with our dollar-denominated loans to Chinese real estate and Belt and Road, that's their initiative to, you know, gain favor across the globe, to those recipients. And the loans are in distress levels now because those people are having a hard time, those countries are having a hard time paying them back. I mean, that seems to me to be a tremendous hammer that we could use to extract what we need from them, whether it's stand down in Taiwan or, you know, I mean, it seems like we've got potentially, given their economic situation and our ongoing, despite all of its problems, economic strength, relatively speaking, to really take advantage of the app. But yet I hear Janet Yellen just the other day. She's talking, sometimes she sounds like a Chinese trade representative, Thomas. I mean, it's like, oh, we want to make sure that both of our economies do well. And I mean, are these people out of their minds? Janet Yellen, Joe Biden, trade representatives from the United States? Help me understand.
Well, if I may say so, it's the same attitude they have towards the Ukraine. They want to kick the can down the road. They don't want to do too much to they're afraid that Putin, in that case, will react against them and escalate the war. In China, they just want to have some semblance of reduced tensions. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. They don't want to change anything. Meanwhile, the Chinese march forward. They they get into new product areas like semiconductors and electric vehicles. They continue to undermine our economy. If we were to push back on them by restricting access to our financial markets, for instance, or sanctioning their banks, or stop helping them bail out some of the bad loans that they've made to the developing world, they would get the message, and they would have to either decide to let their economy go to the dogs or work with us more closely. So, yeah, I agree with you. We just need to be more aggressive about using the leverage that we have because of their weak economy.
Yeah. Well, final question. I mean, at the end of the day, and kitchen table issues are important both to people around the table and to the politicians whose vote they seek. A good friend of mine, John Tamney, who's just a free trade guy, and I'm fond of John. I like John. John says, what are you guys worried about? Let China make cheap pocket combs. Let them make cheap stuff that you put on your lawn. I've got this beautiful flashing LED light angel on my front lawn that was made in China, Thomas. I mean, it's really pretty cool, I have to admit. Let them do that kind of stuff, and let's do the stuff that America's great at, innovating, disruptive innovation, in the way of Mr. Christensen, God rest his soul. You know, that's what America does. Let them do the cheap stuff. Let the cost of living stay low for all of those cheap items. What's the argument against that? Because after all, if items are cheaper here for Americans, their standard of living can go up for less. I'm being devil's advocate, you know. What's the counter argument to that?
I understand. I don't mind having, low-priced goods like Christmas lights coming in from China. But China is much more sophisticated than that now. They're making, you know, they dominate, for instance, the high-speed train sector. They're going to dominate the electric vehicle sector. Trust me on that. We can't compete with them on that. So do we want them to dump cheap electric cars into the U.S. market and undermine the Midwestern auto industry? I don't think so. They're not using fair rules of trade. I mean, they subsidize the heck out of their industries. Yeah. And they're starting to get into things like computers. They make cell phones. Fortunately, we fought back on their cell phones and kept their cell phones out. But it's not just cheap goods that they make anymore. It's a lot of sophisticated goods. They subsidize them. They dump them on our markets. They drive our companies out of business. And that's what we need to push back on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think more and more Americans realize that making a little, maybe buying a little less, but quality, because there always has been a quality issue in manufacturing with China. Maybe that's improving too, but, you know, making the sacrifice to buy American, spend a little bit more, support your fellow worker, and in turn, fellow workers support you, and we maintain a robust economy, and we maintain our values. Well, it's been a great conversation, Mr. Duesterberg. Thank you for joining us, and I really would commend everyone to read that Wall Street Journal piece. They can read your work on the Hudson Institute's place as well. So it's a great conversation. We thank you for really delineating the way forward. I just hope Joe's listening. Maybe he's listening. I'll send him a copy of the podcast. Thanks,
okay,
Thomas.
Thanks. Nice to be with you.
Have a Merry Christmas. Really appreciate
Same
it.
Same to you.
Okay. All right. Well, there it is. When we come back, Lieutenant Governor candidate Bob Onder and our good friend here on the program will join us because he, of course, recently garnered a huge endorsement from Missouri Right to Life. We'll talk about that. Maybe a little bit about China because the Lieutenant Governor has a lot to do with travel and investment and commerce in this state as well. Coming up, Bob Onder, later on, Virginia Cruda. And after that, Mike Ferguson. Big show. Just keep it tuned here to 101.9 News Talk STL.
Season of all. There'll be parties for hosting marshmallows.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer. On News Talk STL.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop.
Hey, it's Vic Porcelli. Come hang out with Ken Williams and me every Monday through Friday from 9 to 11. Right now, it's back to the Randy Tobler Show on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
And you won't find more informative and entertaining radio than Vic and Ken. Before him, Mike and Stell and Gabe. Great show. And then in the afternoons, it's Tony and Katie, and then Tim and Chris. And on the weekends, you know, after our show, it's Bob and Eric, and then Tony's got the outdoor show. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. I stream the show incessantly, the station incessantly, and my wife gets, she loves the station, but sometimes I develop even worse selective hearing, if you know what I mean, because I've got the earbuds in and I'm selectively hearing. Guys, you know what I mean. Anyway, thanks for being here on News Talk STL. Hope you'll stay with us just as much as possible as things are gearing up in this election cycle. This is another Super Bowl, and as this is the superest of Super Bowls, and I just created a word, superest. I don't know. Quentin, would you write that down and see if that's in the dictionary? I'm not sure. You can do a little fact-checking there. One of my superest friends in the world is Dr. Bob Onder, and you know, he's a conservative's conservative, and Bob is running for lieutenant governor. He joins me now. How you doing, Bob?
Good morning. I'm doing well. It's great to be back, Randy.
Yeah, and excited that you recently received, just shortly, I mean, you've just been, you announced your, you know, your run here just a short while ago, and right away you garnered the Missouri Right to Life endorsement, which is a huge thing, right? Let's talk about that and how the campaign's going.
Yeah, the campaign is going really well. Well, you know, we started, you know, talking a little bit on your show and other shows maybe about a month ago about running for lieutenant governor because really, you know, Allison and I were really enjoying retirement from politics, and we were looking forward to this being a cycle in which we supported other good people. But there were just a number of things that led us to say that we couldn't sit on the sidelines and that we needed to look serious and then to run for lieutenant governor. But yeah, on Monday, we officially kicked off the campaign. We had an event in St. Louis and then went to Jefferson City, where Missouri Right to Life honored me with their exclusive endorsement in this race for lieutenant governor. You know, we went to seven cities over 3 days. Great reception everywhere. Great press, TV and print and radio. So, you know, we're having a great time, and we're looking forward to a really fun and successful campaign.
Yeah. So, of course, we have the embattled speaker, with his problems running. We have Holly Rader.
Yes.
Talked to her the other day in my Columbia show. She's a good conservative woman with a good story. I asked her, what's the differentiating, the differential between you and Dr. Bob? And she had a couple things to say. It was actually very complimentary as well. What are the differentiating factors, Bob, between you and the other candidates in the race?
Well, Randy, I think the big thing is I am the conservative in the race. Again, Missouri Right to Life has recognized my pro-life leadership and, sees some pretty serious deficiencies in the other's records on the issue of life. You know, I've worked to protect your Second Amendment rights. I've carried the NRA's, priority bill during my entire time in the Missouri Senate. I've worked to cut taxes and eliminate regulation. Some of my opponents have voted for that massive tax increase from a couple of years ago, the largest tax increase in Missouri history. I work to rein in the oppression of the local COVID so-called public health tyrants. Some of my opponents voted against that. I've been a leader in education freedom. I passed the strongest law in the country to fight illegal immigration back during my time in the Missouri House of Representatives. And too many times, again, I had those two opponents, and they voted different ways on different things. But many times they've been on the kind of progressive Jeff City swamp side of some of these issues, whereas I've been the conservative leader. I've been effective. I've passed some of the most important legislation to make it to the governor's desk in the last 8 years. I think Missouri Republicans are looking for a conservative leader, not an ethically challenged politician or a lobbyist turned politician. So I think those are the big differences.
Okay. We're talking with former state Senator Bob Onder running for lieutenant governor. Let's get the website out there, or the best way to get in touch with you, Bob, if folks want to follow the campaign and be involved.
Yeah, my website is bobondermo.com and Facebook and Twitter, Bob Ondermo.
Okay, good. So there's been a lot of buzz in this last week among, the political insiders about a re-engineered conservative caucus, if you will, now under the Freedom Caucus name. That seems to be gaining sort of almost like a franchise from the national Freedom Caucus brand.
Yes.
And to be fair about it, I think there's been a lot of controversy over whether sometimes the enemy of better is best when it comes to conservative values and the abortion issue. We see what happened in Kansas. We see what happened in Ohio. Eventually, it worked out, I think, pretty well with Mike Johnson as the Speaker of the House. But boy, it was messy getting there, starting last January with holdouts, and the one vote to oust a speaker, and McCarthy took the bait, and then he died by that sword.
You
a member? Yeah. Are you a member of the Freedom Caucus unofficially? Officially, tell us about the State Freedom Caucus.
So, of course, I'm not in the Missouri Senate right now, but you're right. The Missouri State Freedom Caucus will be a loosely affiliated with the national group, the State Freedom Caucus Network, which is, kind of modeled after the U.S. Congressional Freedom Caucus in the U.S. House of Representatives. I think the reason for this organization in Missouri forming is too many times Missouri Republicans who have now had power for 20 years too many times act like Democrats. I mean, Missouri has really lagged behind many of its Midwestern neighbors, the nation as a whole, and certainly other red states in so many ways, including economic growth, in terms of education opportunity, in terms of cutting taxes and regulation. I think too many Republicans govern like Democrats, and it's been recognized, just as it has been recognized in the United States Congress, that sometimes you need a group of self-identified actual conservative Republicans. The things that the Freedom Caucus in D.C. are saying, or the Freedom Caucus in Missouri are saying, are no different than the things that the RINOs told their voters when they were running for election. And yet they get to Jeff City or Washington, D.C., and they sell out to the swamp. Dean Plocker and Caleb Browden are doing nothing to try to pass initiative petition reform. They are working with the lobbyists who want to be able to buy an amendment to the Missouri Constitution for a few million bucks so that they can advance whatever their agenda, whether it be a business group in Jefferson City, or be an out-of-state special interest group that wants to ban our guns, give us abortion on demand, raise our minimum wage, or whatever, the expand Medicaid, whatever the progressive issue of the day is. So we just have too many Missouri Republicans, especially in legislative leadership positions, who might as well be Democrats. I applaud the formation of the Missouri Freedom Caucus. I think they're going to be very effective, and they are the most principled, effective conservative leaders in the legislature.
All right, let's talk about the abortion issue in Missouri. I mean, there's going to be an initiative petition with language that doesn't reflect the reality, like Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft wanted it to. He lost that battle. Okay. Why would you be amenable? Because there's a lot of really good conservatives, Bob, and I think I would consider myself among them, who have had conversations about why isn't there a conservative push to have a counter option, another proposal on the ballot that, while not perfect, while not a constitutional absolute ban on abortion, would at least begin the limitation of it for once and for all, and allow the legislature to do that. Something along the lines of, hey, the people of the constitutional amendment, the people of the state of the Missouri will not ever allow a legislature to allow an abortion beyond 12 weeks. I'm picking a number, 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, and the legislature has the purview to reduce that as, the people of Missouri deem them through their electoral choices. Wouldn't that be a better choice than what might pass in the alternative, allowing abortion all the way up to the day of birth?
So the pro-life Kansas constitutional amendment that failed it was something along those lines, that said, abortion is banned, but the legislature can do this or that or the other exception, and it failed. I think the real issue we have here is that the pro-abortion side has been very effective in leveraging the so-called hard cases, which are or perhaps 1% of all abortions, if that, and using that as a club to beat up the pro-life movement. You know, why won't you allow abortion in this or that hard case? The real issue is that the pro-abortion movement wants to come to our state and put abortion on demand in the Constitution. Even the cases that purport to limit abortion later in pregnancy, they have this broad health exception that has always been interpreted to mean mental well-being and economic circumstances. So abortion on demand, all 9 months of pregnancy, no limitation on partial birth abortion, no parental notification provision. That's what the pro-abortion movement is going for, and I'm not sure that an intermediate proposal is going to work, because I think pro-abortion side will come to the state and spend a lot of money misrepresenting that side and defeating
it. I hear you loud and clear. I really do. I understand that totally. It just, man, it just seems like one after another, this issue has not only been used to elect woke, progressive, lost, out of their mind, you know, legislators, and yes, a president, but also to actually expand the access to killing our unborn, and it's just tragic. Bob, hey, listen, I'm really excited you're in the race. I'm excited you're in the race. I'm excited that you got that endorsement. Look forward to more conversations as the campaign season moves on. All the best to you and Allie and your great family as the Christmas season rolls along. We'll be talking soon in the future.
Well, same to you and Helene and your family. Merry Christmas.
All right. Thank you. There he is, Dr. Bob Onder, lieutenant gubernatorial candidate in Missouri. Look forward to talking more with Bob as things move forward. When we come back, we'll see what Virginia Cruda thinks about the National Defense Authorization Act and other sundry topics. Oh, yeah. What does she think about non-white parties in Boston by the mayor there? I bet she has a thing or two to say. We'll listen to that in just a moment. I'm Randy Tobler. It's 101.9 941 News Talk STL. We'll be back in a second.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL.
Good morning, everybody. Tony Colombo and Katie Fitzpatrick here.
Thanks for listening to The Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL. And don't forget to join us every weekday at 2 p.m. for Colombo and Katie.
Also, keep it here for my Saturday morning show, The Bluff City Outdoors Show, today at 11. Now, back to Dr. Randy Tobler. Love you, Doc. Like
and I love talking with those great, great people every Thursday afternoon. It's fun to talk with Tony and Katie and love to listen to the show, of course. It's fantastic radio. We were talking with them just last week about some of the woke craziness that's going on. And one of the things that Virginia Cruda joins us now. Virginia,
yeah.
I cannot believe. I keep thinking that I've been maybe dreaming when I see that the Boston mayor is non-apologetic about the fact of that she gave a whites excluded, whites not welcome party. And the only thing she's apologetic for is that they mistakenly, the whites, got invitations. I mean, tell me it's not true.
Well, you know, segregation is the new desegregation, I guess. Separate but equal used to be racist, and now it's not. It just depends on who's asking for it, I guess.
So, now take a listen to this clip. Take a listen to the clip. I'm going to play this clip of her, and I want your comment on it, because I mean, this is emblematic of just how far down the tubes this country has gone culturally. This is the mayor of Boston, Massachusetts. What? Well, okay, it was the mayor of Boston. I don't know what happened.
I can't hear it, but I'll tell you what. I do know what she said.
Okay, that That's okay. We won't play it. That's fine. Yeah. That's okay. Let's not take it. But she basically said, well, you know, we appreciate the diversity. We had a Hanukkah party. We had a Christmas lighting. To my knowledge, Virginia, non-Jews weren't excluded from a Hanukkah, and non-Christians weren't excluded from the Christmas party. That's a difference.
Well, right, right. Because, and the thing is, to say that one particular group needs a different holiday party than the other particularly, I mean, if you want to have separate Hanukkah parties and separate Christmas parties and a separate Kwanzaa party, you know, whatever, that's fine. But there's a difference between doing that and saying, well, we're going to have one holiday party for everybody, and then we're going to have a different holiday party for these people. And, you know, it was 50 years ago, if you had told that same group of people that they had to have a separate holiday party, it would have been racist. And even now, if we told them that they had to have a separate holiday party, though, because they want it, now it's not racist. Like, I don't understand. Can we just agree on what is and isn't racist so that we can all move forward together? Because that's part of the problem, is that it doesn't matter what you do. If somebody else does it, it's not racist, but if you do it, it is. So it really, it the motivation even doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't, because even if say a white mayor, because I believe the mayor is Asian, is she not, the Boston mayor?
Yeah, right. She's Asian.
If a white mayor were to say, in the interest of inclusivity, we're going to offer a holiday party for non-whites, I think that they would still call her racist because she's speaking from a place of privilege. But if someone who is not white says, I want to do this for the rest of us, then it's fine.
Yeah.
And that's,
the problem. You're racistly damned if you do and racistly damned if you don't, unless you're non-white.
Exactly.
This is absurd on its face. But don't you think that most Americans get it? I mean, these people are so fringe. I mean, I guess what scares me is that these people get elected, because certainly they showed these kind of colors on, and I don't mean racial colors, but I mean just philosophical colors on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I agree.
The National Defense Authorization Act, or Authorization Bill, passed. Republicans were pushing for some things they didn't get, but at least they did. They were able to, as we understand, get rid of CRT as part of the indoctrination program in education. Well, as a veteran, what do you think of the recently passed NDAA?
Well, here's the thing. I think that when you're talking about funding the military, obviously that is something that is constitutional and it's actually mandate. It's one of the few spending things that is mandated by the Constitution. And so to have that, you know, obviously we want to have that, right? But some of the things that are in it, it's just like anything else that comes out of Congress. They put a few things in it that don't go there. And then you're stuck finding it out later. So one of the things, and they, you know, they were saying, oh, your barista's going to spy on you. You know, what it basically did is gave federal authorities the ability to pull data from Wi-Fi connections in public spaces. So, like, if you're using the Wi-Fi at Starbucks or you're using the Wi-Fi at a McDonald's or wherever, any place that is considered a public space that provides Wi-Fi, then the federal government can access the data that's transmitted over the Wi-Fi there. So that was one of the things that was in the NDAA that I don't think got pulled out. So you'd have to look into that. But that's why people were saying, your barista is going to spy. They didn't really mean your barista is going to spy on you. They just mean that the Wi-Fi data collected while you were using said Wi-Fi would be accessible to federal government.
So
it's
that's
not
probably,
Starbucks spying on you. It's still the federal government doing it. They're just Starbucks.
Right. Well, but your employer always does have the right to. Your employer does have a right to anything you do over their Wi-Fi. I mean, you know.
Your employer, yes. But your employer isn't the federal government. They're your employee.
Yeah, but isn't the federal government a recruits employer?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they're not employing the people at Starbucks, and we're not talking about Starbucks employees. We're talking about Starbucks customers that are
I get it. Yeah, no.
So when you're talking about the federal government using Starbucks Wi-Fi to right. get, yeah. so and they're I not thought saying it was they're going about, to do it. They're just saying they can't.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was more. Yeah, it was at Pfizer. There's a short extension. All right. I was going to play something. I've only got a minute and a half here, but I want to play some Kamala word salad and see if Virginia Cruda, for a little fun, see if you can translate this. Go ahead, play it.
We all watched the television coverage of just yesterday. That's on top of everything else that we know and don't know yet. Based on what we've just been able to see, and because we've seen it or not doesn't mean it hasn't happened. But just limited to what we have seen.
Now, Virginia, you're a wordsmith of great acclaim and accomplishment. Do you have any clue what she was talking about and what she just said? Can you contextualize it?
Well, that I would have to know when she said it. I mean, was that after October 7th? Was that after something happened in Israel? Was that after? I don't know. I don't. There's no way. That's the beauty of most of Kamala Harris's sound bites. You can apply them almost anywhere, and they're equally meaningless.
Yeah, their stream of consciousness. It's just crazy. I don't know what to make of her. I don't know if she's going to be the default nominee should Joe Biden, you know, flame out, and which is, I think, increasingly likely. If he doesn't voluntarily do it, they're going to give him the hook. What are the chances Joe Biden, in the last 30 seconds we have, what are the chances Joe Biden is the nominee of the Democrat Party on November ballot 2024?
Oh, gosh, that depends on a lot of things. If Kamala Harris is their only other choice, I think they ride him to die. I mean, they're going to stay with because I don't think they want Kamala Harris.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. But then, boy, if they leapfrog over her, watch out. Oh, man, the fireworks will start. Virginia, hey, thanks for being with me. We'll talk to you next week right before Christmas.
Sounds good.
All right, take care. Hey, coming up, folks, lots of excitement. Mike Ferguson joins us in just a few.